Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to BLT, Business, Life, Transitions, the show that explores all the latest trends in your business, life, and our favorite topic, transitions. Hosted by Brian Basilico, the Director of Direction with B2B Interactive Marketing, and Jan Marino, CEO of High Gain Companies, Inc. And now it's time for some insightful conversation and interviews with your hosts, Brian and Jan.
Good morning, Jan.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
I'm just peachy. How about yourself?
I'm really good. It's spring.
I'm glad to hear that.
And there's some green stuff on the trees. I think they're called leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's exciting.
Yes, it is very exciting. I think in Colorado they call them buds, but that's a whole other thing. So anyways, we were talking beforehand, and I teased you a little bit, and I was telling you, since our guest this day is talking about books, I told you a little tip about writing that I do. And here's how it works, is I end up going into my Mac, and if you go to just any edit menu, you know, go to edit.
Okay.
And you go and you look down at towards the bottom, the second to last thing, it says start dictation. And since since you bought a microphone, you can easily just talk in whatever text you want to do. As a matter of fact, that's how I write my blogs, because I'm so into the podcast mode right now.
Right, because I'm doing
the podcast every single week. It's like when I finish talking in my podcast, I just basically turn on my word processor and use kind of the same outline to write my blog.
Well, that is so cool. Thank you. Because I see it now, and I didn't know when you were talking before, because I blog as well, and I blog at least, you know, once or twice a week. And and then I was thinking, after you said that, it would be so much easier to kind of write out an outline and then talk through my next book, which I'm going to be working on. And you just finished two books, your third book, your second book?
I've got three books, but I'm actually working on my fourth.
Okay.
And I haven't even come up with a name on it yet, but I do have it.
Okay.
I use a tool called Scrivener to write. So I've got pieces of it in Scrivener. I've got the intro and the forward, and you know, I've got it outlined. I just haven't really dug too much deeper into it, but that makes it a lot easier to be able to talk it through. You know, if you just create an outline,
right,
like I use Evernote, create an outline in Evernote and just talk it through. And it just, first and foremost, it makes it more conversational, which is easier for me. And then secondly, you know, it's just the way I communicate is auditorily. You know, I'm an auditory learner, so I like talking. So it's so much easier for me to kind of put my thoughts down that way than it is to, you know, try to sit there at a keyboard and type, especially since I never took typing class in high school, so I'm one of those three-finger typists.
Well, what I find interesting is when I finish a blog, I always read it out loud to myself to see if it is conversational. So this would help immensely.
Yeah,
so
you can also you could have the computer read it back to you too, you know. So you could have it dictate the blog so you can listen to it. Sounds a little funky coming from a computer, but still.
but who cares? I mean, but anyone out in our audience is listening today that does blogs or just wants to try to start blogging, this would be an excellent way, because I'll tell you, there's nothing more daunting than sitting in front of a blank piece of paper. Well, with a computer, you've got a blank screen and you got to start somewhere. But if you could just start talking, I think that would be so much easier.
Yeah, we could talk.
Well, thank you
we'll
for
definitely
that,
talk through
too.
That. And oh, you're welcome. Not a problem. We'll talk through that another time.
Because
I got a whole other course on just blogging on how to blog. So, but anyways, let's get to our guest. Fred Weber's with us. Fred, are you here?
I am indeed.
How you
doing,
morning, this
Fred?
Morning?
Very well, thanks.
Good.
Awesome.
Well, we're really glad that you joined us. Fred came to us through a mutual friend of mine, and Fred's story is that he has an extensive background working with Follett Books. So I'm going to let him tell us a little bit about his background, and then even more excitingly, what he's going into, because his new venture, because we talk about reinvention stories on this program and want to share your experiences and learnings with other people. So you're on, Fred.
All right. And I think extensive background sounds a lot like a euphemism for old.
and now here's old Fred.
You're not wrong, Jan. You're not wrong. So my story, I'm a native Chicagoan, and like many of the kids from my old neighborhood, I'm a first-generation American. So my father immigrated to Chicago from Eastern Europe as a young boy in the 20s. He assimilated, graduated from Roosevelt High School, went off to World War II, and returned to Chicago to start a family. I'm the first of two kids, and we grew up first in Albany Park and then in West Rogers Park. Graduated from my neighborhood high school, went to public schools the whole time. Back then, I think, at least in retrospect, the Chicago public schools provided a pretty decent education. But since no one in my family had ever attended college, my folks' only goal for me when I graduated high school was to get a college degree. To them, unlike today, a college degree was an end in itself. So when I headed off to the University of Wisconsin in 1965, I had really no career aspirations. I had no role models for how to behave or what to study in college. And there certainly was no discussion of whether the investment in a college education provided a decent return. That's something very new. To my folks, a college degree, as I said, was an end in itself. So, Jan and Brian, I don't know if you, either of you or your listeners, know or remember what the University of Wisconsin was like in the 60s, but I can tell you it was unbelievable. Along with Berkeley on the West Coast and Columbia on the East Coast, Wisconsin
then you had
was...
Madison. Yeah.
Madison.
Yep.
Yeah, go please.
Well, it was pretty radical, wasn't it?
It was pretty radical. It was on the leading edge of the Cultural Revolution in the 60s. It was it was great. And to me, having grown up sort of in a blue-collar area, everything was new to me, everything was exciting to me, and everything was full of possibilities. And as I said, I didn't really have a lot of career aspirations. I had no career aspirations. I was going to college. The rest would take care of itself. So I started college as a math major, but I migrated to philosophy during my junior year. There's sort of a point at which philosophy and math intersect, and that's logic. And frankly, I was blown away when I discovered that I could argue about the nature of reality, about the difference between believing and really knowing, what it means to behave rightly. And you can get paid for it. So to me, it was crazy to do anything other than become a philosophy professor. You know, it seemed the obvious thing to do was to become a philosophy professor. So pausing only long enough to get married to the only girlfriend I ever had in college, I went to Northwestern. I got a PhD in philosophy, and I took the first job that was offered to me as an assistant professor at the University of Hawaii at Hilo. Not a bad gig.
Not a bad gig. It's Rice.
Not a bad gig at all. And it's on the Big Island. It's not the main campus.
Right.
Then it was a small liberal arts college, essentially, not unlike the Navy Pier was before there was a UIC. It was a small campus of the University of Hawaii, and it was a great experience. But while in Hilo at the University of Hawaii, I got involved with public humanities programming, representing the fields of the disciplines of the humanities, in my case philosophy, in public programs. So going out into the community and talking about land use issues in Hawaii from a philosophical perspective, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked that. I really enjoyed that interaction with the public. And so after 5 years, I packed up the family, which now included two kids, and we moved to Providence, Rhode Island, where I went to work for the state-based program of the National Endowment for the Humanities. And so the NEH, if you know the organization and its sister organization, the National Endowment for the Arts, was very much a 60s concept. It was making the disciplines of the humanities, like philosophy and literature and history, more accessible, more meaningful, and more practical in the lives of ordinary folks. And it was great fun until the early 80s when the economy changed and politics changed, and that kind of public support became increasingly scarce. So seeing the handwriting on the wall, I went to classes at night, and I got an MBA and decided to craft a future in what back then I simply called the private sector. No real direction, just going into business of some sort. And having been a native Chicagoan, my wife and I decided that it would be great to return to Chicago, where there was a lot of family support and friends and so on. And so through a series of conversations, I guess today we would say I was networking, I landed a job with Follett Corporation, which is a family-owned book distribution and college store management company. And I ended up working for Follett for nearly 30 years, although I did take a hiatus 2001 to 2005, and I worked for DeVry University. Did that for 4 years, but returned to Follett in 2005 and then retired there 3 years ago as a senior vice president for wholesale and distribution services. So it was a great run at Follett. I loved the people. I loved the business. Then after my retirement and until the first of this year, I taught courses in the management department at DePaul, mostly organizational behavior. I did some work with my son-in-law in his mattress recycling and renovation business. And I spent a lot of time with my wife and our five grandchildren, which was pretty good. Then late last year, I was contacted by several former Follett customers, bookstore managers, some of whom I'd known for nearly 30 years, and I was asked to return to the college store industry as the CEO of the Independent College Bookstore Association. And so I've been on the job now for just over 3 months.
So let me back up a minute, Fred. When you decided to go back and take night courses, because we have a lot of listeners who are going through transition and reinvention, and one of the avenues that they look at is going back and getting additional training or getting, an additional degree. Were you working full-time? How difficult was that for you?
Yes, I was working full-time. I was the associate director of the Rhode Island Committee for the Humanities, again, the state-based program, and I went strictly at night. I went to Bryant University in Lincoln, Rhode Island. And was it hard for me? It really wasn't. My wife was very supportive, and the job provided enough flexibility so that I could get my studies in. I spread it out over 3 years. Never took more than two classes in a term.
Okay.
And so it worked out all right. You know, it's for whatever reason, lots of things are very difficult for me, but academic stuff came fairly easily. So it wasn't a great burden. It wasn't as much of a burden as I'm sure it is for others.
Because you have that flexibility and because you have support.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Family support.
I think that's really important too. And so now you're starting this huge new adventure.
Yes.
And so what made you, you know, you had retired and were looking, you spent more time with your family. What was it about this opportunity that made you stop and go, yeah, you know, this sounds interesting?
Well, I think, first of all, it was, you know, the contact was made by people who I know, people I respect, and people I enjoy, number one. Number two, I really felt that I, you know, it was an opportunity to leverage not only some of my strengths, but the experience that I had for 30 years. It was a return to an industry, albeit in a very different position, but return to an industry that I knew fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
I felt I still had energy to
mm-hmm.
give. I felt I had still had the opportunity to make a difference. After a lot of conversation, I decided it would be fun. And for me, that's a really important criterion for deciding the direction you're going to take. Is it going to be fun? Are you going to enjoy it? I mean, you know, you spend a lot of time doing whatever it is that you do. And if you're not having a good time doing it, you might as well do something else. So it looked to me like this would be fun. It looked to me like I could make a difference. It looked to me like I had, you know, I felt I had the energy to do it. It was a natural thing to do.
So with all the changes in books now, I mean, are you seeing a lot more in digital books, or, you know, is it still the traditional print book stuff?
Well, in the college market, in the textbook market, there's much less. It still represents, as a percentage of the total course materials market, digital content still represents less. It's a single digit, the percentage. And there are a lot of reasons for that. I mean, the textbook format, as you well know, is different from what in the business we call a trade book, the novels that you get. And so it's got to be a four-color. In most cases, it's got to be a four-color presentation. That large format is important because graphical material can be presented in that large format, the double page spread. And so there are short print runs. There's lots of reasons for textbooks to be slow to come to the digital age. But we are seeing more of them. And I think certainly it's not a question of if, it's only a question of when. The predominant course materials will be digital. And I think what's going to make the big, the tipping point is going to come, I believe, when digital course materials present themselves as making a difference in learning outcomes. So a lot of the digital product today is some of the digital product, the early digital textbook product, was simply a digital version of a print textbook. So it
mm-hmm.
was exactly what you might have gotten if you had purchased the book at your local college bookstore. But native digital product, the stuff that's developed, the software that's developed, the word is adaptive. It is now becoming more adaptive. So if the three of us, Brian and Jen and I, are taking a class, and we're doing the exercises online, the adaptive course material identifies what the kind of mistakes we make, and it customizes the subsequent exercises and materials to our particular learning needs. And so as more and more research is being done, the course material can actually make a difference in learning outcomes. That is, students will actually do better with those materials than the traditional print materials. When that becomes more prevalent, I think you'll see more digital product in college classes. And, of course, it's a generational thing, too. As baby boomers begin to retire from the academic world and they're replaced by younger faculty members who are more comfortable with the digital environment, that, too, will accelerate the process.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of challenges are you seeing right now with the new position that you're, you know, your the association that, that you're going to be starting up?
Well, I'm not starting up the association. The independent.
That's right. They're there. You're moving it.
They're there. I'm going to move it here. And there is Ashland, Oregon, which is a lovely, sleepy little town in southern Oregon. I thought you fly to Portland and drive 30 minutes. Not at all. you fly to Medford. I know you've probably been to Medford. Many people have. It's the home of Harry and David, by the way. And then you drive another half hour from Medford to get to Ashland. And it's in Ashland because the executive director, when the organization evolved from the Western College Bookstore Association, which was a buying group, to the Independent College Bookstore Association, the first executive director was the bookstore manager at Southern Oregon University in Ashland, and he said, well, yeah, I'll do this as long as we're here in Ashland. And so that's where they are. It's where they've been for 27 years. But now the organization is changing a bit, and the board, which is made up of directors of large college bookstores, was interested in moving it to a hub city. And when they selected me for the role of CEO, they were simultaneously selecting Chicago as their home. And so right now I'm very much involved in trying to get situated in Chicago. And it's a much bigger task than I had anticipated.
It's a much bigger challenge?
Yes, it's a much bigger challenge than
sure.
I had anticipated.
Sure, sure.
You know.
Yes, because, you know, all that moving. And so what, just overall, what are like the two things that stand out for you that you've learned just since you accepted this new position?
So in the last 3 months, I've learned that in a very practical way, I've learned that the key to being successful for this organization, and I suspect for most organizations, is attracting the right kind of people. And by the right kind of people, it's not just a matter of skill sets. You know, there's a cultural fit that needs to be there. There's a willingness. It's a small. The team, the ICBA staff, has 5 people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Everybody's got to do everything, you know. And
right.
So finding the right people is much more of a challenge than I thought it was going to be. And we're in the process of bringing – none of the people who were in Ashland, Oregon, were interested in following the organization to Chicago.
Okay.
So essentially we're rebuilding the entire team. Small as it may be, it's still the entire
yes.
team that's being rebuilt. And
right.
so it's turning out to be a real challenge to find and attract, and it's the kind of budget you'd expect for a small
mm-hmm.
not-for-profit organization. Finding
sure.
the kind of people that will work with the kind of energy and commitment to the team effort has turned out to be a challenge. So that's number one, you know.
Yeah.
Number two is managing the change in the organization. As I discovered, not everyone in the organization. There are about 150 college bookstores, some very large ones. I'm happy to say the University of Wisconsin bookstore is a member, University of Colorado, University of Oregon, Cornell University, large stores.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're not all taking to change as well as I had hoped. And so managing the change and the expectations has turned out to be a little bit of a larger challenge than I expected it to be.
Well, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to make sure that we get, because we're running close on time here, and I want to make
yep.
sure that people can, if they want to get a hold of you, Fred, and learn more about what you're doing, how should they do that? What's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
best way is email, and my email address is Fred Weber, one B in Weber, at ICBAInc.com. ICBAInc.com.
Great. Great, because this sounds like a really exciting time, and those challenges, I know that you can face them. It'll be interesting, though, to we'll have you on again, say in a year, when you got your team in place to see how things are going and, you know, what's coming along for the industry. How does that sound?
It sounds great. I suspect I'll be a much, much older man in a year.
And the other thing, Fred, is I reached out to you on LinkedIn this morning, and so if you know, somehow or another we can connect up, I can maybe point you in the direction of some potential candidates and stuff like that, because we all know a lot of people. I mean, Jan's in
we
a group of 90,000. So, you know, we know a lot of good people in the area that maybe can help.
That's terrific, and I've already accepted your gracious invitation to connect. Right now we're looking for, again, it's a we're looking for an integrated marketing person, and we're looking for a business coordinator. The real challenge is to find someone who's willing to forego some of the benefits of working for a larger company, be a part of a small team and build something.
Right.
And where are you based out of? I mean, where's the office at?
Well, that's part of the move. We're looking at some places. We're going to be in the loop. We're going to be somewhere in the central or west loop. I've been looking at properties. I'm having a look at a place today. My hope is we'll be somewhere convenient to public transportation, somewhere on LaSalle or somewhere on Wells or somewhere close.
Good. Well, listen,
good to know.
Thanks so much, Fred.
Yep,
thank
it was a
you
pleasure.
Thank you very, very much. And we will be in touch.
All right. I'll look forward to hearing from you guys.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye now.
Thanks. Take care,
Fred. Bye.
Friend.
We've got about 2 minutes here. So
we do have 2 minutes, yeah.
I was so excited to bring Fred on because he is doing some remarkable work. And, you know, you don't think about these little bookstores. And some of those that he mentioned are not little.
No.
And it's changing, and he's in the forefront of it. And you know, even though it's 5 jobs, they're bringing jobs to Chicago. So,
right.
If, you know, if any of our listeners are interested, you can contact me directly at jan.highgainco@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I've got the information.
And you can always contact me
jobs.
Too, and
right.
we can forward all that stuff since we've got the
yeah.
connection. So, yeah,
right.
No, good stuff. And it's I loved his story about reinvention again, and the fact that he came
right.
out of retirement and everything. So it's
right.
always good. Stuff. We always have such a great guest, and you find a lot of them, Jan. You're really good at it.
I do. I just thank you.
You're welcome.
But they're fun. I mean, they're interesting, you know, and that's what we want for our audience. So we thank our audience very much for supporting us and listening to us as we start every Monday morning.
Exactly.
With
so
exciting guests.
Absolutely. So we have, about 20 seconds. So any parting words for the week, Jan?
Enjoy your week. Enjoy your family. Enjoy yourself.
Agreed. Yep. And make sure you guys go check out Jan at High. What's your new? It's the new website is called what again? ReinventionChronicles.com.
ReinventionChronicles.com.
All right. Go check that out. Check out
yourself.
Bacon Podcast as well. So, all right. Take care.
Bye.
Okay, that's today's BLT, Business, Life, Transitions. You can contact Brian at bbasilico@me.com and Jan at jan.highgainco@gmail.com. Join us again next week for some more great insight about your business, your life, and your transitions. Till next time. Thanks for tuning in.